Greetings and hello. You've joined us for another episode of The Last Video Store, the show where I, Alexi Toliopoulos, talk to cool, funny, and interesting people about their favorite films in the style of an old school video store rental combo, which includes a bonus recommendation from me, a staff pick based on their taste, based on their film selections. That is honed in exactly right for everything that I think they'll love in the world of movies. And joining me on the podcast today, I did not expect to get this guest. This is a nice one. I really, really am a big fan of Josh Thomas. I have been for a very long time. And now I would say we are peers. We are colleagues. but Em, you were very excited to get Josh in.
Yes. I have also been a fan for a long time. As demonstrated by the photo I sent you last night.
Yeah, let the record show you at nighttime when we locked Josh in, sent me a photo of you. I'm guessing you're like 22 years old, maybe younger.
I'm 17.
17. Sorry to say you were you looked 5 years older. But at 17, to hear you look 22, you would have been wrapped.
I would love that. I could have snuck into a few bars.
And now looking at you go, you look like you're not a breath over 17.
Yes, I've regressed.
Yes, you've regressed.
But that was 17 years ago. I got that photo with him. Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Oh my God, don't say that. I feel old.
I feel old too. Maybe I've made him feel old.
But yeah, I did the gala with Josh the other day. So we had a very fun time hanging backstage at the gala. My career highlight of my life. Probably not as much for him because he's done that shit many, many times. But it was very fun. And so when Josh was in town, I was like, sneak into the Last Video Store, pick up some movies.
Yeah.
Because I think he's a great, like, when I saw Please Like Me back in the day, his TV show, I really thought it was such a high watermark for Australian comedy.
Yep.
The production value on it alone felt really cinematic. And that was something I don't think Australian comedy in particular ever really achieved. I think it's just such a beautifully written, performed, directed, everything show. So I've always wanted to have Josh, like just to talk film with Josh. And he kept on telling me how illiterate he was at film. But then you'll hear on this podcast, he says some of the most exciting and interesting and insightful things about the movies he's picked.
Mm-hmm.
Just a true pleasure to have Josh on. And make sure you stay till the recommendation because it's one of the most weird experiences I've had on this podcast is trying to recommend Josh a few movies. Josh is on tour with his new comedy festival show. He is doing the full month at Melbourne International Comedy Festival with his show Jiggle Jiggle, Sydney Comedy Festival, Perth Comedy Festival and Brisbane Comedy Festival. Good Brisbane boy, see him in Brisbane, I reckon. But go see the show. Josh is so funny, and I think that he is on like a brand new tear because he's also returned to the world of podcasting.
Yes.
And I used to love his podcast, Josh Thomas and Friend.
Me too. I think it's the first podcast I ever listened to.
It was, it was so early.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to also, he's not that much older than me.
No, not at all. He's not just really ahead of his time.
He just like started podcasting early because I remember listening to it in high school.
Yeah, me too.
Talking about it in high school. But Josh Thomas and Friends and You is returned. And with my dear friend Tom Ward back on the airwaves with Josh, star of Please Like Me along with Josh. I think it's really nice, special to see him up there. So this is our chat with Josh Thomas. Come see him at the comedy festivals. Come see me at the comedy festivals. I'm at Melbourne at the moment. Sydney, I've added an extra big show because we sold out Sydney. So there's a big, big show on May 17th that we've just added tickets to. So go see it there. Brisbane, I'm coming for you. And Perth, I'm coming for you for one big show only in Perth.
Don't miss it.
Don't miss it. Buy tickets. I'm so proud of this show, VHS.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going bloody great at Melbourne Comedy Festival. Presuming I'm recording this before I've left, but I'm presuming it's doing great. The tickets are selling really well. So buy tickets soon before all sales out. See you guys very soon. And let's get to our chat with Josh Thomas, babe. Welcome back to the airwaves, Josh Thomas. You've returned to the world of podcasting and come to the Last Video Store.
Hello.
I'm glad to have you back in the world of podcasting.
How old are you?
I am I'm around 30-something, early to mid-30s.
Because I think I'm 39.
Yeah.
And you were just talking about, we're going to talk about going to the video store as a kid. And I do think that I'm like, we are one of these only age groups that really like, stepped into every form of media in a very like sincere way. If you're a bit older than us, like the next generation above me don't really, they're still on Facebook, right?
They love Facebook.
And they didn't quite they're go watching into Facebook the internet videos, in the
their favorite
way.
Media form.
And we've gone through all of them.
We were pirating movies. We were getting digital downloads. We had to embrace video on demand.
I was dialing up.
Yeah,
I was downloading porn one line at a time.
One cell at a time.
As the photo would load down the thing.
Did you have to print them out as well?
Yeah, my brother had some printed out.
I had some printed out and hidden.
Yeah.
I remember I printed out images from Big Brother Up Uncut.
Uh-huh.
I printed them out, and the way I remember how I hid them was, you know when you would get like a Nokia phone and then the box would have like an egg carton to keep everything in there?
Uh-huh.
So I would keep it, you would lift the egg carton up and you'd think that I would hide my pornography just underneath that.
Uh-huh.
But I hid it with inside the creases of the egg carton that would keep the phone in there.
Well, that's
because
nice.
Even if you would lift it, say if my mom was investigating, she wouldn't find them because they'd be inside the creases.
Would she care?
I can't imagine a mum would care that much that I printed out images from Big Brother Uncut.
No, I don't think so either.
But back then it was high stakes for me.
But even needing to turn to broadcast TV to see nudity is like, that's like our generation. Mm-hmm. That's not, that kids these days aren't doing that anymore.
No, they can get a full gamut of pornography targeted to their own choices and lifestyles.
Rotten.com, was that a part of your...
Of course, and failed blog, all of that, you know, horrible stuff. I'm looking at Pain Olympics. I've seen Pain Olympics.
What's Pain Olympics?
I dare not say. Okay. I'll tell you off the record, but I don't think I want to have it on the record for
you. No, I understand.
But you're talking about video store as well. Like, that was something... I feel like we're the last generation to have, like, a full life at the video store as well.
7 weeklies for $7, fights, and a Musman curry. From the Thai place next door.
Wow.
It was a blockbuster.
Which one? Where was it?
It was in Brisbane. I think it was the Kenmore Blockbuster. And I remember my dad having a big fight with them because we rented The Lion King. Mm-hmm. And it was re-released from the Disney Vault. It wasn't the original Lion King. And we didn't release it. We didn't return it as a new release, as a one night new release. And he just was he was really screaming at them because how dare they say that The Lion King was a new release. And they were trying to give him like $60 of fines because Disney had brought it out of the vault.
Wow, that's the evil Disney vault conspiracy there as well. But I think he has a point. How would you think The Lion King would be a new release?
Well, they re-released it. It had that song, This Is The Morning Report. Bad.
Don't put it in there.
I think they took it from they wrote it for the stage show and then put it in. Or they'd cut it and put it back in.
The stage show has beautiful songs in it as well. There's one called Shadowlands I think is so beautiful from the...
The Lion King was close to being in my selection, actually.
Really?
It was just such a beautiful animation, wasn't it? I mean, The Circle of Life is one of the best cinema scenes you can hope for in this world.
Absolutely.
It's hand-drawn.
Hand-drawn looks beautiful.
It's stunning.
The stampede is like one of the most heartbreaking moments I've ever seen in a film. And I think it's a great way, like The Lion King was the first film I ever saw in the cinema. I don't remember because I was quite small, but I remember going to see it and I've been told it was the first one. But I think it's a great way to introduce like high stakes and heartbreak to a child is a movie like The Lion King.
It would be so fun to watch The Lion King in a cinema now. It's like so gorgeous.
It's so gorgeous. Well, you know, a couple of years ago you had the chance of the live action remake of The Lion King that's also just animated with CGI creatures.
That I'm not as into.
No, it's too much because you lose the beauty of the artistry of those hand-drawn images.
The Lion King, I don't know if it is the last like handmade, hand-drawn movie, but in my heart it is.
There were others after, but nothing matches the prowess of the Pride Lands.
No. Absolutely. I don't know why you're laughing.
Actually. I'm laughing because I'm enjoying very
sincere.
Myself. I'm sincere.
I feel very sincerely that way.
Let the record show we both have a tear just dangling from the corner of our eyes because we are being sincere right now.
We are being sincere.
But that is the power of the Bridelands, you know? That's
and
it.
It is.
The majesty of the beasts.
And it is something that because you wanted me to pick a modern movie and I was like, I'm not really that into it. I'm not really that. I'm quite, for someone who is a filmmaker, I'm like quite film illiterate. And
do you go to the pictures to watch movies?
No,
not so much. Are you a home viewer more so?
Oh, I don't watch them. I watch The Real Housewives.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and I watch like, I haven't even seen Heated Rivalry yet. And that's like
Yeah, but still.
For my people, and very good.
Yeah, of course, it's for horny gay people.
Yeah.
And also straight women.
I've watched The White Lotus, and maybe it would be one of the only scripted shows I watched in the last few years. But it is movies that too, like, I don't know, they're too computery for me now.
Too computery. But you've picked your, you're going to head out into the weekly section then. Mm-hmm. So I want you to embrace your nostalgia, the mm-hmm. movies that meant the most to you, Josh. Movies that have changed your life and shaped your being. Mm-hmm. Movies with beautiful sincerity around them.
I wouldn't even say my three, even though they're old movies, mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say they're nostalgic. I've watched them all within the last 6 months.
Oh,
they're very current in my life.
I reckon let's get straight to talking to them, Josh. Yeah. You've got a beautiful stack of movies all from our weekly film section. Mm-hmm. You've picked up... Shall we start with this beautiful classic from the comedy section? This has previously been rented out from the last video store by Vic Serps, but this is, for me, one of the comedies that just absolutely, I think, made me go, I'd love to be funny. I'd love to try and be funny uh-huh. out there. But you have picked up the all-time cult classic, in my opinion, for people around our age, Rat Race.
Rat Race.
Comedy.
2001, Jerry Zucker. For those that haven't seen it, because I don't know if this is kind of passed on to the next generation of people.
Nobody knows about this movie, I wouldn't think.
Tell me about, yeah, give us a rundown of Rat Race.
Well, there's two amazing movies that end with, hey, now you're an all-star. One is Shrek.
Performed by Smash Mouth. By Smash one in Mouth. Person, one just in the digital realm.
They had a really big year. which is probably the only bad part of Rat Race, actually, is the final scene where they do Hey Now You're an All-Star.
I love that final scene where they land at a Smash Mouth concert. And because I was of the age where I'm like, Smash Mouth must be the biggest band in the world right now.
To be in both movies.
To be in two of the my two favorite movies of that year, or two big movies.
I go, very funny movies.
Very funny movies. I go, I can't believe that it's like, that come they got Smash Mouth.
Should we talk through some of the plot of Rat Race?
Let's
some
talk through
the iconic plot. Rat Race scenes.
Because it kind of kicks off with, it's in Las Vegas, is it?
It kicks off in Las Vegas and everybody wins a token, an unlikely group of people to get thrown together.
A mismatch of people who all have their own lives and stories going on.
And they have to go on a race to find this money. And there's like rich people. John Cleese is the leader. And they're betting on who's going to win. Mm-hmm. But the cast is...
It's stacked.
Stunning.
It's like everybody is in this movie. Breckin Meyerbeer, Cuba Gooding Jr., Amy Smart, Seth Green, Whoopi Goldberg, Rowan Atkinson, John Cleese. And I'd say my two favorites in this movie are John Lovitz and Kathy Najimy.
Absolutely. Anybody who said otherwise would just be so insane. And so one of the things about this movie, the way it's contributed to my life in the last 5 years is whenever the last writer's room I was running, whenever they couldn't think of anything, I would punish them by suggesting various scenes from Rat Race and talking through them in great detail. Like,
how about there's a crazy lady that's trying to sell nuts for squirrels, but in the middle of the desert, and you ignore buying the nuts, and then eventually she gives you a wrong route where you'll fall to your death like many others have.
You crash the car, you're in the desert. How do you fix that? Well, you just steal the fastest car in the world. And then you zoom through the desert and you're Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, and then newfound daughter that she didn't know about until the start of the movie. Daughter.
And then you get to the end of that. You think like, well, what's their next mode of transport? Well, they're very dizzy from going very fast. So we'll put them in a bus of mentally ill people. And they're trying to convince them that they're not mentally ill.
But because they've just walked so fast, their brains are a little scrambled and their hair's all mucked up and they're walking dizzy style.
So now they're on this kind of the special pass. And then I'd say,
and that's like, just one of 19 plot lines that run through this movie.
John Lovitz wants to take his daughter to the Barbie Museum. Mm-hmm. And by a desperately difficult twist of luck, it was... one of the Nazis that was called Barbie doesn't come to mind. So they're at a Nazi museum.
And they're at a Nazi museum. And, of course, the family is Jewish.
They're Jewish at a Nazi museum. And then they think, what do we do? Well, steal Hitler's car, which for some reason is on Route 66 in America outside of Las Vegas. And then things just get worse for them. Oh my gosh. The wife, she wants to try on the black lipstick.
Oh, of course. And that makes him and then she rubs his tongue and he hits the lipstick with his nose. So he's got a hitless mustache.
And then what are the chances of this? To first be at a Nazi museum, then be in Hitler's car, and then crash into a Holocaust memorial. I mean, that's bad. Like, somewhere along the way, a child does a shit out the window.
Yeah, well, she was prairie dogging.
She was prairie dogging.
Which, of course, is when the shit is halfway out your bum hole, but it can go in and out like a prairie dog.
Yeah, which was so funny to me as a kid, and I still actually don't know what a prairie dog is, but I can imagine. It's like a gopher.
It's like a little gopher, the way they pop in and out. So if you can imagine a shit that's dangling out of the bum and going in and out, well, then you can go reverse and understand what a prairie dog is.
A prairie dog is, yeah. So I actually more know what a prairie dog is from that cinematic moment than I do from anything else.
Well, of course, we have wombatting in Australia, which is when it's a really big poo.
When it's square.
It's a big square poo coming out.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry to change the tone there, Josh. But truly, I think this is one of the funniest films ever made.
Can you tell me
about the first time encountering this film? Do you remember the first time you saw it?
I just remember thinking, wow, because I love Fast.
Mm.
I love Fast. And this is quite a good movie, like, in the, because one of the issues with Fast is always you have to do so much setup.
Yes.
But they get to it pretty quick.
And I think because there's so many different storylines, you can make them just a little bit, the stakes two-dimensional for each of these people. Where you go, this is the thing that's going on in their life. Then the stakes are added, which is they would like to win this money.
And you can kind of skip a bit of the setup, but you can leave the guys that have the swollen tongue and then come back to them. And now they're attached to the cow, attached to the hot air balloon. Mm-hmm. And just like hitting the cow into the field, and you can skip quite a bit of shoe leather and just like get right in there.
Like, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr., I don't know what he does in the movie, but like I always think about when he's driving a coach full of all these Lucys. From like these loose balls.
I mean, that's bad luck as well. What you do is you pretend your wife's having a baby so that you can steal the uniform of the bus driver so that you can steal the bus to win the race. And then just by sheer bad luck, you find yourself stealing a bus filled with I Love Lucy impersonators.
And I think that's so, like everything about this is so considered. Like there's jokes everywhere. Everything is a comedic set piece. Like every single moment of this film is a comedic set piece, either in the foreground or it's in the background while exposition is being told.
And it never feels as crazy as like it feels as it feels. It's so crazy, but you're so with them. And then one of the I Love Lucy's is, of course, a man because it was the 90s.
And it's a shock.
And then did they...
How can a drag queen love I Love Lucy and be on this bus? How can that be?
Well, because they have to... That was why they had to use the toilet on the bus.
Yes.
And then for some reason, the bus got filled with soap suds. I actually can't remember what led them to that. But then you've just got a busload of I Love Lucy.
That may have just been a coincidence. That's the one. That's a coincidence.
No, it's because the trans or drag I Love Lucy absolutely needed to use the toilet on the bus because...
They didn't want anyone to know that they were a drag queen.
Yeah, and he wouldn't stop the bus because he's in a race.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, all of the bets from John Cleese and the rich people, it's just like that scene where they cut back and they're all on this crazy turbulence on this private jet. And then one of them vomits. And then you realize that they've been laying bets on who's going to vomit first from the turbulence.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 14 seconds of cinema and it's absolutely wonderful.
What do you think it is about Fast that draws you to it?
I love when you kind of, there's like a moment where you break from your own sense of reality or like are in their world. And I also love, like, I love seeing them lay the pipe. I love like seeing them like, oh no, you went right and you should have gone left. Or like someone's like, oh no, look at this like very expensive Ming Dynasty vase. And you're like, oh, that vase is in trouble. I sort of like seeing them do that. And then when it just like goes so fast and you're like in it, it just makes me laugh more than anything in the world.
I think this film really nails that, especially it takes so much of, you know, obviously it's an homage or a riff on It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which is a 60s version of like this exact
is
thing.
It?
Same huge cast, like another huge cast of comedians from the
is 60s. Is that one good? Should I watch that?
It's great. Like, it's great. I prefer Rat Race because it's my generation of like comedy stars that I love.
And it also is that this also does feel like a movie similar to the hand-drawn Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last time they would have made a movie with comedy like this. Like, you just could not make it now. No. But it's still so funny.
To me, it's still so funny. And I think it is because, like I was saying, it's got like this great group, like this great cast, but it's like so many different flavors and textures of comedy. Yes, it's everyone is super heightened, but in this movie where you've got like Breckenmeyer and Amy Smart, like that are pretty as close to a naturalistic performance as you get in this
film. Wait, which one of those two in
that's
the characters?
The guy and the girl that she's a helicopter pilot and they just
That's not good. Like, he was winning, wasn't he? Because he was the only one that could get, because it was only fixed-wing aircrafts that couldn't fly. But he found a helicopter pilot. And then on the way, she had to see that her boyfriend was cheating on her
and
from outside the helicopter, and she's a psycho. That's bad luck.
Like, I think that is like, that's as naturalistic as you get. Then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got your John Lovitz's and stuff. That's like, he's such a heightened comedic performer. So
God,
funny.
He's so funny.
Like, I think John Lovitz is one of the funniest people that's ever lived. And I think this is one of his crowning achievements, this film, because you get to spend so much time with him exasperated by his big, crazy family.
I absolutely believe he crashed his lip into the black lipstick, got the Hitler massage, and then accidentally drove his car into the Holocaust Memorial.
And I believe that he burned his tongue on the cigarette lighter inside that same car that made his not being able to enunciate and make it sound like he was speaking German and then he's throwing his hands around.
Because that's quite a tough day for an actor where you're like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
What do you want me to
John
do?
John Lovitz, I can do it. I can do it. But then I love as well Rowan Atkinson playing like this narcoleptic, eccentric Italian. He's basically playing freaking Mr. Bean with an Italian accent running around.
And
Wayne Knight, Newman.
Newman
him. And it's like this, it feels like a Lost Kramer episode, but Kramer's now Italian.
But of course you should have Newman and Mr. Bean together.
It's just like they have so many different energies in this film that because of the way, the farcical nature of its plot and each kind of ensemble being like one thin thread, it's like they all just kind of weave together to make, I would say, and I'm going to get the glint of tear coming from your eye, the sincerity coming from the corner of mine, that it's one of the great tapestries of comedy in our age.
Also, it doesn't waste any time.
No.
It does. This movie does not waste a second. At the beginning, there's a little bit of sitting while I'm waiting for my daughter. There's a tiny, maybe 3 minutes total.
But you need to be eased in to go onto a journey like this.
You have to be eased in. They have to pace you in. Once they are on the race, you are on the race. They do not waste a second in this movie.
Not at all. Thank goodness. I'm so glad you picked up Rat Race,
Apart from the actual ending, I find the ending to be...
Oh, come on. By that point, you're already getting up in the cinema and you're just hearing Rockstar, All-Star Play by Smash Mouth.
I just don't think they needed, like, to try and force this feel-good ending. I wish that they all just died. Or,
that's
like...
That's actually good, if they all died.
I just would have preferred it if... So in the end, the assistant steals the money with the hooker.
Yeah, I love that part.
Really good twist. That. He should have just driven off and they should have just been left there alone. Cut to black. I would have been much happier.
Yeah. And then All-Star can play over the credits. It can All-Star, be over the credits.
Obviously, I want to hear All-Star, but I just don't think they needed to. I feel like I think my taste, because the whole movie was so heightened, I think having an ending that was small would have felt much better. Better than trying to get nastier. To the end and build like a bigger moment.
Make it a little bit nastier. That is Rat Race. You picked up from a comedy section. I'm so glad you did. And you still wandered around the comedy section. And do I hear the twinkling of jingle bells? You have picked one of the Christmas classics of our time from writer-director Richard Curtis, the master of the romantic comedy in England. Mm-hmm. You've picked up Love Actually.
Comedy.
Mm-hmm. Once again, a tapestry of multiple storylines that weave together. Yes.
Also, doesn't waste any time.
No waste of time in Love Actually. Do you watch this every single year at Christmas time or any month
No, I chose Love Actually. You told me no one's ever picked it.
No one's ever picked Love Actually.
It's interesting to me. Because it is one of the biggest movies in the universe.
It plays every year in Sydney, and I'm sure plays everywhere else. Yeah. Every year in Sydney at like the freaking entertainment center with a live orchestra.
Oh, God, I would go to that. The thing about Love Actually is it's getting a lot of heat lately. Well, so I've picked it because...
Two Rowan Atkinson's movies, by the way.
Have you ever watched the deleted scenes from Love Actually? We don't have time.
I know what you're talking about. It's a little martial arts sequence or something where the kid flips over. That one?
Yeah, the kid flips over. There's Rowan Atkinson's whole storyline was cut. He had like a storyline that mostly got cut. So his scenes are actually so weird. They made no sense. And they also did these ones where they went into the like... sort of Oxfam posters and they did these little vignettes in like Africa of like the two women in like the Oxfam posters complaining about their husbands. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that. I just loved that so much. You know, it's Richard Curtis is definitely the biggest like creative. I had the biggest creative influence on me. Mm. I mean, Four Weddings and a Funeral.
I can see that very much in your work where
it's clear.
Very clear. I've never thought about that.
Also, we literally do Love Actually scenes in the we literally do the one with the cards in Please Like Me.
Yeah.
But also there's a moment
but
in Love
like
Actually.
It's like the melancholy, I think, of these movies of Richard Curtis, where it's like there is comedy. Then there can be also broad comedy and then also like genuine heartfelt stuff. And I think about Please Like Me. I think about – I've never thought about that connection before, but it makes sense.
Oh, it's an incredibly straight line from Four Weddings and a Funeral and Love Actually to Please Like Me. There's a moment at the beginning of Love Actually where he who's the guy in his wife's dad?
Oh, that is Liam Neeson.
And he's calling the woman that we love so much. He's calling the woman that we love so much.
He's calling Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson. And there's just this tiny little scene. And she's got her kid there dressed as a lobster in the nativity play.
I love
and that. She goes, I've got to go. I'm so sorry. And she goes, it doesn't mean that I'm terribly upset that your wife just died. And then she kind of is on the phone and does like a little wince and he laughs. And that was like so defining as a comedy style to me. That moment is just like, I remember being like 12 and seeing it and just thinking like, that is such kindness from her. Mm. And I loved it in the movie. And then she obviously has like that best moment of the movie later.
Oh my gosh.
But the big defense of Love Actually that I want to say is because it's getting a lot of trouble for being bad to women, and Richard Curtis's movies are bad to women. But I have a lot of ways that I can defend him on that.
Don't worry, I'm not pointing the gun at you today. Don't worry.
But I think one of the things, whatever. But I think the thing people forget about Love Actually is it's a very political anti-war movie. The context of the opening of Love Actually is it's set in an airport because it was just after 9/11. Yes. Everybody was really scared of traveling. And it was saying like people are so scared, but actually these big world events, and this is very similar to the next movie we're going to talk about, these big world events that are happening outside us and beyond us. And I think also this moment that we're living in this era of our actual lives right now, this is happening again. These big, scary world events are beyond us. And that movie was about focusing in on small, intimate relationships and love. And it was very like, we forget now, but that opening scene being in an airport at the time was extremely powerful. And then you have Hugh Grant stands up to the American president.
Played by Billy Bob Thornton.
Incredible choice.
Great choice.
And saying, we will not be bullied by America. And it was a movie about...
And it was
about
a time when fucking America was bullying the world to go into war with
them. The UK was going to war with them. And they were playing this, like, what if we had a prime minister who just had a fucking spine and didn't send us to war?
A spine and a winning smile.
And a winning smile. Oh, God. And a Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant, then. What a love.
I mean, the cast of this is great, but the one I'd love to highlight, we've already been talking about, is Emma Thompson. Mm-hmm. I think her storyline with Alan Rickman, who's potentially going to be having an affair with like one of his co-workers. I think Emma Thompson is one of the great actors.
Incredible.
One of the great writers as well. And like just a true genius of the screen. But I would say she's had so many great films, but her storyline through this is like maybe her crowning achievement as an actor.
It just sits with you. And I mean, she would have... Also, the thing about this movie that's so... And I love not wasting time is most of these people will only have, like, they're such short, so few minutes on screen. And there's so many moments from these characters and these actors that you can, like, remember to this day that are, like, so strong.
Yeah.
I think Four Weddings and a Funeral is a better movie.
I think so too, but Love Actually is so easy to keep in mind because the storylines, like you said, are so clear.
It's so epic. Also, it just did, people forget that it landed in this moment of like incredible relevancy to the world. It's like
at Christmas time.
I think Richard Curtis he's so good with gays, actually. And he's so incredible with the disabled. And he does such a good job of building these textured worlds. And then he always has these terrible women characters. Andie MacDowell in Four Weddings and a Funeral is one of the most criminal things that's ever happened.
I remember there was some list that I remember reading at that time, like in some film magazine, where they ranked the most annoying characters in film.
Yeah.
And number one was Jar Jar Binks. And number two was Andie MacDowell in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
But I think that's because Hugh Grant's there all the time. And the only way you can manage Hugh Grant as a character and as an actor is to... Because even Julia Roberts, who is stunning in...
Notting Hill.
Her character doesn't talk. Like, she has maybe 18 lines of dialogue. And all of them are amazing.
All the dialogue is Hugh Grant stammering at her. And you go, I love this man.
Yeah, and it's just Hugh Grant stammering. But there is no way to script Hugh Grant's character across from someone who isn't a bit like that. Yeah. And I like, please like me when I'm, or whenever I'm having a camera. My boyfriends are always...
They're Julia Roberts's. And
they're they're not that quirky because you can't like...
You're quirky enough.
You just
How
can't.
How much quirk can
you
go into one?
You need someone to be a bit more boring. So then, because he works with Hugh Grant so much, a lot of his female characters end up being a bit... thin. And
that's
then
a good insight.
The other thing about Love Actually is a lot of the complaints about the way that show treats women is it is that movie is built on cinematic tropes. So because it's built on cinematic tropes, it's kind of echoing the history of cinema back, and a lot of the history of the cinema is misogynistic. So I think that he looks worse because of that. But also, I mean, it's undeniable that Keira Knightley was 17 in that scene. And that's
crazy.
That's pretty rough.
It's crazy. You know, you can't... I mean, I saw it when I was younger than her. So I was like, she's a grown-up.
Yeah.
And now I look back and I go, yeah, shit, she's fucking young.
That's pretty rough.
She looks like a teenager. She's getting married to Chiwetel Ejiofor and she's a teenager. Anyway, that's probably where we're going to leave Love Actually. But beautifully spoken, Josh. Beautifully spoken.
I've got a lot to say about that movie.
Well, you know, next time you come here, you can still
if
pick it up.
If you really love Christmas. Oh, my God. Bill Nye.
We didn't even say Bill Nye.
And his manager. And he goes, and he says to his manager, I think you might actually be the love of my life. I think that's an amazing scene.
And I remember it was the first time I saw boobies on the screen when Martin Freeman is doing the when they're playing those porn stand-ins or whatever, the stand-ins for sex scenes.
No nipples, the body doubles. But you see.
Well, I saw enough.
You saw enough.
Well, from one to the next, we're taking a turn away from the comedy section here. You've gone to our music section to pick up, I would say, one of the true masterpieces of 1970s cinema. I love that you teed it up when you talk about Love Actually, talking about the contrast and juxtaposition of the best times when the darkest times are looming ahead. Because I think this is the greatest theatrical and cinematic version of exactly that. 1972 by the legendary Bob Fosse, you have picked up Cabaret.
Music.
Tell me about Cabaret, because I think this is such a beautiful choice from you, Josh.
Well, it's genuinely the best movie of all time. It's absolutely flawless. No notes. What note could you possibly give that movie? It's completely individual. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is powerful to have the Nazis coming. Sound of Music, Cabaret, Nazis coming. You get a lot of free emotion from that.
But it's
as a creator.
It truly, and it's that darkness of them approaching and you knowing as an audience like where this is heading to.
And the contrast of that outside world with these people's small lives and what matters to them is like a really nice thing.
And it's that freedom of expression that that movie's so about.
Beautiful. The songs are good.
Yeah.
Liza Minnelli in that movie is so incredible.
I would say Liza Minnelli is one of the greatest performers in living memory, I would say. And her as Sally Bowles in Cabaret, I have to say it's one of the greatest screen performances of all time.
Absolutely.
No one else could play that character that she can, with both this really chilling, brutal vulnerability that she can bring to it, but then also the incredible stagecraft that she brings
incredible
to it.
And also so charming and so so assured but so lost. It's like very good from her. The dialogue in that movie is amazing. I've had two boys fall asleep during it, and I stopped dating them.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it wasn't conscious, but I've realized that maybe it was. It's an interesting movie because it is slow.
Yeah.
It is slower than you think. And they're sort of laying a lot of plot in conversations very casually in a way that you don't know is happening, which is my preferred way to lay plot. You feel like you're watching two people hang out, and then the story develops, and you don't sort of realize that the story's developed until it's happened. And that movie is so good at that. Like, you always just feel like you're hanging out with these people, but actually there's an incredible amount of plot. And
I think Michael York is just perfectly cast as, I guess, our perspective character in the film, Brian Roberts, because he's just got like this kind of golden boy energy to him, but also you believe not the ineptness, but like you believe every moment of like his sexual awakening that happens through this film.
Yeah, you know, the first time I watched the movie, I didn't like him, and the second time I watched it, I really did. And you believe why he would get carried away by Liza Minnelli, and I understand why Liza would carry him away.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Cummings is a thrill.
Oh, in the movie, it's Joel Grey.
Isn't Alan Cummings in the movie?
No, he was a baby when it was happening. Or he'd be too young. Joel Grey plays the MC.
Joel Grey,
won Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars, beating out every man from The Godfather.
Really?
And I think about that all the time because you go, well, how can Al Pacino not win for Godfather? And then you watch Cabaret and you go, fuck, Joel Grey is amazing.
Incredible.
Joel Grey is one of those people that fascinate me because he has a really great, stage career. Then he has like this interesting film career where very early on he wins this Oscar for Cabaret in like a truly career-defining role as the MC. Like the MC is one of the most famous characters
I've seen
on stage.
So many people try and do it lately, and it's brutally difficult. It's like a very, because that character is so weird, and to land it in a way where you don't feel uncomfortable watching him, we've learned from
many
Eddie
stage
Redmayne and quite a few people lately. That's
did you
very
see Eddie Redmayne on stage do it? Or
you know, I saw Alan Cummings and Emma Stone do it on stage once, which is pretty blockbuster.
God, what the?
Yeah.
I mean, Alan Cummings is born to play this character as well.
Yeah, and I saw it in England. I saw a version of it, but I just prefer the movie so much more.
Well, the movie does such a good job of translating, and I think Fosse is a genius at this. Because Fosse, you know, he'd done Chicago, he'd done so many great like theatrical musicals. And I think he's the genius of adapting them to screen, where I don't know if anyone's matched him. Even when Chicago was trying to do the Fosse thing and it wins Best Picture, all that stuff, I don't really love that movie because it feels like false Fosse to me. I think it's okay.
Oh my God.
But I'm sorry to shock you here. I'm sorry to be controversial on your episode. I'm so sorry.
I've never really forgiven Catherine Zeta-Jones.
For what? Being the most beautiful woman?
I don't think she's good in it.
I
never really knew until I watched a few stage plays, and I've just seen so many better versions of that character now.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, she's actually a bit empty.
Oh my God, I'm aghast right now. Thank you for meeting my controversy with more controversy.
Haven't I shocked?
You've shocked me. But I think Fosse is so good at taking like the musical of Cabaret is so specific because when you're watching it, you feel like you are in a cabaret watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's able to translate that into when it goes to the screen, it becomes a backstage musical where the songs are diegetic in the film where they're at a cabaret and they're singing the songs, yet they also still propel the plot the way that like a diegetic musical or a non-diegetic musical will, where it's like characters going into that fantasy space to perform the songs the way they would there. So I think it's like the way that he threads it is just like he threads every fucking needle with this.
Well, and those like the he's doing those big musical numbers in such a specific, amazing, huge cinematic way. But the small scenes where they're hanging out, those like English lesson scenes, the scenes where she's making the prairie dog, the like cracking the egg into the is it prairie dog again? What did she call it in the movie?
I can't remember. I haven't seen this movie for like 10 years.
Oh, it is. It's so beautiful. But all those moments are so small and like honest and like –
I always remember the moments of the three of them like hanging out in bed and just go, this it feels so real, you know?
It feels so real. But to be able to manage the completely insane unrealism of all the stage performances and the realism of those scenes is like really good. And then, it's also just a really good queer story from a long time ago. And it's kind of an amazing ADHD.
Yeah.
She's so neurodiverse in a world where we didn't know what that was, where she just was unlabeled. And
the only label she had was Judy Garland's daughter. And you go, yeah, that's a kind of neurodivergence, I guess.
Yeah, that's something.
But I think I agree with you. I think it's like the great bisexual movie. Like, I don't think anything has come close to really capturing the like this full spectrum, especially back in 1972, where even that, like the language for that didn't really exist.
Because sometimes you think that like queerness started during the Stonewall riots, because sometimes it can feel like queer history started there. And then this movie's so interesting because it was before that, was made before that, but then also is about an era that's like pre-Nazi. So you just don't really think of queer people pre-Nazis being cool anyway. And that's like kind of, that was kind of exciting to me. I guess I just hadn't really sat down and thought about queer people back then.
Yeah. I mean, really special movie, Josh. I'm so glad you picked that. Cabaret, truly one of the best films that we've ever talked about on this podcast.
Has no one picked Cabaret before?
No, you're the first one.
What are people choosing? They're boys. There's a lot of boys.
Everyone's picking Rat Race. We do Rat Race every fucking week on this show.
Good, as you should.
Yeah, we should, you know. Why we've got so many copies on the wall, Josh. So many copies of Rat Race. We're keeping the new release section so people only get it for one night. But we've come to the part of the show where it's now my duty as your video store clerk to give you a recommendation based on your tastes.
Staff pick.
And I'm gonna give you a few treats, I reckon.
Okay.
Because you were talking how much you have not been watching so much contemporary cinema. So I want to give you a few selects from contemporary cinema that I think you will really enjoy.
Okay.
Whether you've seen these or not, but I'll give you a little sample platter, I would say.
Shocked if I've seen them.
The first one I want to recommend you, this is kind of, I'd say, more off Rat Race, or more of all of them. This is like the one where I go, this is straight down the middle of all three of your picks. But this is a film that I caught in the cinema a couple of years ago, 2023, directed by Nick Lieberman and co-directed by Molly Gordon, who I think is one of the best character actors working today. The movie is Theater Camp.
Comedy.
Did you see Theater Camp?
Hmm.
I think you'll really enjoy Theater Camp. Let the record show, if you didn't only listen to the audio version, Josh made the tiniest noise and a tiny shake of the head saying they had not seen Theater Camp.
I just feel so embarrassed. I've never seen anything.
You are being given the gift of new movies to enjoy.
Okay.
So embrace it. Let that tear anti-gravitational pull right back into your eye.
What happens in Theater Camp?
Theater Camp is an ensemble comedy. It's told in the style of a faux documentary, light mockumentary style.
Uh-huh.
But it is I'm just going to read your plot synopsis. After the indomitable and beloved founder of a scrappy theater camp in upstate New York falls into a coma, the eccentric staff must band together with her clueless crypto bro son to keep the thespian paradise afloat. And so this is a theater camp for teenagers and younger. And so it's all these former people that would go to the theater camp, now played by Molly Gordon, Noah Galvin, Ayo Adebiri, so many like great comedic stars of like contemporary cinema, Ben Platt, who are all very much theatrical theater kids and musical comedy people themselves. who now play like the camp counselors.
I just think it's so unlikely I'm going to like this.
I think you would enjoy
it. I don't know
it.
Why, but there's I'm so bad. Heart. You should know I'm so bad at getting recommended. This is going to be the most challenging recommendation
I'm crying
list.
Now. I feel like I'm being challenged. I think you'll really enjoy this because I found this to be like a true scream. And there's like this climax I think that pulls in this sincerity in a really pure way.
Wait, are we spoil the ending?
No, I'm not spoiling the ending. I'm just teeing you up for something I think you really enjoy. Because I'm not going to say what the ending is, but I will just express my feelings for the ending here. Where all the kid performances in this movie, like there's all these kids that are genuine like theater kids and theater camp kids, like, you know, teenagers and younger. And they're so talented that you start to feel quite emotional seeing like all these kids like have this such bold and beautiful talents. And then you get like a storyline with like these older kids that many of them didn't get a shot. And now they're like the camp counselors in like their 20s and stuff coming back. And there's one performance by Noah Galvin that I think is just so good. And the film has like this climax around his character that I had tears in my eyes of like pure laughter, like just thinking it was one of the funniest moments I've seen. But then there's like a true sincerity to the character that makes it, takes it that bit further because you go, I'm actually feeling empathy for this character as well.
Okay.
So I really think this is such a straight down the line for you in something that you enjoy.
Okay, I feel so nervous. I don't know why this makes me so nervous.
Well, you know, you also never have
I've
to
just always
back to
felt
me.
Recommendations always make me so nervous. God. I don't know why.
Maybe I'm
it's
not going to give you
isn't
more because I
no,
feel
I
scared.
Want them. I want them. I know.
I feel something's happened to me now. Something,
I'm so sorry.
You give me this energy that makes me feel sick to
sometimes
my stomach.
Sometimes I'm such a bad vibe.
You're a really bad vibe. You ruined my day.
People always do it with restaurants and I'm always like, I just get so scared. I don't know why.
Why would you? I don't know what's happened. This is what I do for a job, is to recommend people movies. And you've made me feel sick in that
I'm
myself.
I'm so sorry.
Josh, you've ruined me. You've ruined
I just
the
wanted
show.
To add some tension to the end
I
of
like the
podcast.
Tension, actually. The tension is good. Let's make a show. I'm actually playing it up for the podcast camera. I actually feel really comfortable around you, Josh. Okay. But that's Theater Camp. I think you will enjoy that. I'm going to give you another one, another contemporary cinema. 2025, this film came out. Directorial debut of James Sweeney, who I think is a really talented writer-director. This movie's called Twinless.
Drama.
Did you see Twinless?
Mm-mm.
This is a little bit more, it's a comedy, but it's also like quite dramatic and has almost at times a thriller feeling in the way that like a Pedro Almodovar film has a thriller feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think it's a very cool film called Twinless. And it stars Dylan O'Brien and James Sweeney, the writer-director of this film.
I've never watched anything scary.
This is not scary. I would say it just has the thrill of suspense in that you're seeing these lives unfold.
Although once I watched A Quiet Place, I thought I can't never watch anything scary, but that wasn't scary. It was stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid. And this is nothing it's like not Quiet stupid. Place. It's not a fucking monster trying to sneak up on people in this movie.
Dumb movie.
The plot about this film I think is so interesting. It's two men who lost their respective twin brothers. They develop a growing friendship after meeting in a support group. However, both harbor long hidden secrets that threaten to tear them apart. And it's kind of like a Pedro Almodovar film is the best way I can describe it, because it's kind of got this like this queer thriller feeling to it without it being, it's just the thrill and suspense of personal connection and relationships unfolding and falling apart and falling together. I thought this was an incredibly unique film that I just thought was really great. So
that they meet in a support group.
Wow.
I don't like that as a cinema trope.
Well, then you can skip the first scene, mate. Skip the first scene. It can evolve, you know. Not everything can be as
it seems.
I don't
know why I'm trying to turn this bit of the into drama.
I like it. I don't know if I like it, actually. I'd take it back.
Sure?
I'm not sure,
I don't
but
like
I, it's
stories
interesting.
That open with people meeting in a support group or people getting an eviction notice.
Well, maybe someone does get evicted in this movie. Maybe it's too much for you.
No.
It's very nice of you to feel empathy for people being evicted.
No, I just think it's a bad trope.
Okay.
No, in a movie. I don't like, I'm not worried about them.
You're not worried about them.
I would
just
say
you worry
like,
about the audience.
When I'm hiring writers, I would say one in two scripts starts with someone getting an eviction notice.
I think it's a great way to start a movie.
Do you think
to
so?
Walk up to your front door and see plastered across it, you're evicted.
It's not very emotional, is it? You want like a person. You want a scene where you
want to see where they live. You want to see their space.
You want, I don't know. Anyway,
I'm going to give you one more, and I would say this is the least tropey movie.
Okay.
Possible. I thought this is one of the best things I saw last year. Incredibly unique comedy from Thailand called A Useful Ghost.
art house.
And I want to recommend this one because I saw it at the Melbourne International Film Festival and it kind of blew me away.
Is it in Thai?
It's in Thai.
I kind of love a subtitled movie.
This has got subtitles flying out the wazoo for you.
It forces me to watch.
It will force you to watch. Yeah. And I'm going to force you to watch this one.
I think because
we're going to be in the same city for a month doing comedy festival. I'm going to check in. Did you see Useful Ghost?
Because, you know, foreign movies took off a bit the last few years. And I think the reason why is because all of the other movies everyone's on their phone. But if you're watching something subtitled, you end up actually looking at it. So I think like the reason why Squid Games took off in such a big way is because people actually fucking watched it.
I think it's really good because I've been trying to figure out why. Because I've been looking at the Oscars this last year and so many of the actual big nominees were from international pictures, foreign language films, quote unquote. And I was trying to figure out why. And the theory I came up with is that because American cinema and Hollywood cinema is in this unique place where they're not making middle brow films, which are maybe an intellectual thriller or a more artistic type thriller or something that's a bit unique and individual or like a high-end drama that's not just like a fucking biopic or something. Those kind of films are being ignored. But international cinema is still making them. And now these big distributors like a Neon or an A24 are picking up these films from the film festivals and like buying all these international films. They're putting those films in the conversation where, in the cultural conversation around film, where there's like this big blank space because the America Hollywood system is not making those films anymore. So these films are like living on and getting these
people off
their
phone.
I think it's both. I never saw the phone theory, and now I really like it.
It's a huge thing at the moment. When you're trying to sell a show, you either have to be – there's like these two ways of attention dealing. You either have to be dominating someone's attention 100%, so that's like White Lotus.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to watch that show, actually.
Or the passive viewing where background –
Or Emily in Paris, which is like they're calling second screen TV.
Yeah.
Well,
I think, I enjoy a good reality program, and a lot of that is because
second screening
for me.
But they're literally starting, like, the executives and stuff are starting to, like, give that as a no. We want this to be more second screen. And actually, subtitles really put you in the first pile. They put you in 100% attention. And I think that's kind of a bit what's going on.
Well, this one will retain your attention a lot. This is a Useful Ghost. I think it's getting some releases now, so I really wanted to put it on your radar. It's got a really unique plot and a really unique energy. And so a few different storylines coming together, like in that vignette style, not unlike some of the other films you talked about today. But I'll give you a plot synopsis. Worried about her husband being allergic to dust, Nat, a recently deceased woman, returns as a ghost possessing a vacuum cleaner to clean the house and protect her family from other vengeful spirits in the house.
Oh, wow.
To become a useful ghost, she needs to rid the house of the useless ones. And I thought this comedy that felt so fresh and uniquely funny, but it evokes like this kind of sense of genuine beauty. It's a very aesthetically beautiful film as well.
Which we like.
And because it's so specific and strange and so about this spiritual and moving on and all these feelings, like it really feels like a Murakami short story come to life in a very wacky, like a very wacky way. But there's nothing else quite like this film. So I think
that's my favorite one.
Mm-hmm. Good. I'm glad I got one that didn't break my heart in front of you.
Wait, no, the first one sounded good.
Okay, yeah, theater camp. You like theater camp?
The second one, I just am going to struggle with a meeting at a support group. I'm not going to enjoy the conversation they have over the mediocre biscuits. Does that happen in there?
Oh, God, I think it might.
Do they meet in support group and they stand at like a trestle table?
I think there might
and
be.
Eat like a Monte Carlo.
They're
or
all
something.
Standing around and go, oh, coffee's pretty bad.
Yes.
Yeah, I think
yes,
that's
every
like that.
Time.
But it's evoking Fight Club. I think it's evoking Fight Club. I didn't think about that till now.
Maybe
it's evoking
Fight Club.
Well, I'm not recommending you that.
It's on
watch
my list.
Twinless instead. You can take it off your list. It's been too long. You've lived too much of your life without watching Fight Club. What's it going to do for you now?
It'll be good, I suppose. Okay. I didn't watch Pulp Fiction for a long time, and then I watched that,
and
I was like,
"You liked it?
Oh yeah, this is really good."
Well, Josh, pull Fight Club on the list too. Cut all the other recommendations. I'm recommending you Fight Club.
No, I want to watch the Thai one.
Yeah, you will love it. You will love it. We'll find it for you. It's coming. I think it's coming to cinema soon in Australia. But Josh, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Truly, a joy
thank
to
you.
Have you, my friend. A joy to have you.
I'm glad you're happy with my choices.
I'm happy with you. You've actually done me proud today, Josh.
Well, that's good.
You've done me proud.
Okay, that's good.
You picked up Cabaret, you picked up Rat Race, you picked up Love Actually, and you're going home with Theatre Camp. I'm going to give you Twinless. And I don't think you'll watch it, but I'm still going to give it to you. And A Useful Ghost. Beautiful films, beautiful choices. You've also hitting up the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with your brand new show. You're doing Sydney Comedy Festival and Perth and Brisbane. Your new show called Jiggle Jiggle. Is there anything you want to say about your show? Just say please come.
Go to the chat.
And you returned to podcasting as well, which I'm very happy about. I'm very happy to see dear friend Tom Ward back on the airwaves with you.
Did you guys used to go and watch movies together?
We used to watch movies together. Me, Tom Ward, and Henry Stone and Sam Campbell when he used to live in Sydney.
Yeah, I remember this.
We'd be going to the cinemas many times together. But he's one of my favorite people. And your shows, Josh Thomas and Friends, and you, a return to podcasting.
You're quite Tom Ward coded, aren't you?
Yeah, I would say that's probably why we got along. Yeah. We have similar codes.
Quite
I'd say we
Tom Ward coded.
We've got quite a similar code, I'd say.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, I'm probably crazier than him outwardly, but he's got a simmering crazy underneath it all.
Oh, that's interesting.
What would you say? How do you think he's crazy?
I know. I've known him since I was 12. Yeah. So.
He's normal, I think.
No, he's very normal.
He's normal, but there's something.
He's funny, but he's not anything crazy about him.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Josh, thank you for joining us, baby. Hopefully see you soon.
You just call me baby?
I call you baby.
Is he a baby?
After an hour of talking, I could call you baby,
of
reckon.
Course. No, of course, man. I just wasn't sure.
The last video store.
That was our chat with Josh Thomas. What a beautiful conversation with a lovely man who put me through the freaking ringer trying to recommend him a film. That gave me a lot of joy. Go see Josh at the comedy festivals. His show is Jiggle Jiggle. Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Perth. He's doing all of them, as am I with my show VHS. And also, do check out the return of his podcast, Josh Thomas and Friends and You. It's in the show notes. I've been listening to it of late, and there's an episode called Humiliation that I really, really enjoyed. Brought me a lot of freaking big laughs and tears. Josh is the best. What a good time to have him on the podcast. Anything else we need to say? Rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks for listening. And if you come to my show VHS, there's going to be somewhere I'm going to hang out after. So keep your eye on my Instagram and the Last Video Store Instagram, because I've been doing a little meet and greets with this show after particular ones where I'll just stick around after. You can take a picky, but more so tell me your 3 favorite movies and I'll give you a recommendation.
And you need to use the code word I'm a return shoot rat, and you need to go...
Oh, you can do the squeaking. I will give you the regardless of the squeaking, but I'd love to hear one squeak from people.
What squeak?
Thank you, babies. See you at the movies.
Sorry.
That was good. That was really good. Okay, great.